Our second case this morning is United States against Hall, counsel for the defense.
May it please the court, I'm Captain Bobby Kazel. I represent the appellant in this case, Lance Corporal Anthony Hall. Chief Judge F. Farm, with permission, I'll reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Please proceed.
In this case, the military judge allowed a non-expert NCIS agent to provide testimony to the members that was based on their specialized knowledge and experience in violation of Military Rule of Evidence 701C. Moreover, this testimony provided by this non-expert witness was misleading on a material matter to the members and was directly prejudicial to the appellant's case. Now, the government has conceded legal error in this case. Therefore, appellant intends to briefly discuss a legal standard and focus the remainder of the argument on prejudice. Turning briefly to the legal standard, this court has not yet addressed Military Rule of Evidence 701C. However, Military Rule of Evidence 701C is identical to Federal Rule of Evidence 701C, which has been interpreted significantly in the federal circuit courts, which have uniformly adopted as their interpretation the advisory committee notes to Federal Rule of Evidence 701C. And the test promulgated from those advisory committee notes and from the circuit court opinions is that if testimony results from experience which is not familiar to everyday reasoning or familiar life, and this is the type of testimony that falls under Rule of Evidence 701C and is prohibited. In this case, Special Agent Rezus, the NCIS agent, provided testimony that, based on her viewing of the burns of the victim, was indicative of non-accidental trauma due to clear lines of demarcation. Now, this was testimony that was based on what the trial counsel asked her, based on her experience having a master's degree in forensic science and some experience in child abuse, thereby making this in violation of Military Rule of Evidence 701C. If there are no questions on the legal standard, I'll focus my remainder of my argument on prejudice.
Can I ask you a brief question? Dr. Schneider, do you agree that her testimony was proper expert testimony?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sorry to interrupt.
Turning to prejudice, the appellant agrees with the government that this is a non-constitutional error. Therefore, prejudice is assessed by examining the four care factors: materiality, prejudice, the government case, and the defense case. Turning first to materiality, which also the government has conceded, in this case, there were no eyewitnesses to the actual incident which caused the burns to the victim. All that the government had, essentially, aside from the appellant's NCIS statement, was the expert interpretation of those scars on the victim's bottom. What did those scars mean about whether this was an intentional, malicious act of maiming, or was this accidental? The erroneously admitted testimony in this case directly concerned this most material fact at issue in this case, namely the interpretation of the scar pattern on the victim.
Didn't the physicians as well?
I'm sorry, sir?
Didn't the physician's testimony address that as well?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Schneider, the actual government expert, did address that exact area. However, her testimony, her being an actual expert, was much more detailed and much more clarified than the simple statement by the NCIS agent that this was not accidental. Because she was an
Which way does that cut?
Well, Your Honor, assessing this because
if you have detailed expert testimony and non-detailed, non-expert testimony, how's that weigh with trier of fact?
Well, Your Honor, the members, the first interpretation they get of these burns comes from this federal law enforcement agent, Special Agent Rezus, who comes in front of them and tells them it's not accidental and doesn't clarify that in any manner. So the first exposure the members have is very black and white. Afterwards, through the actual expert witness, through the defense counsel cross-examination, and through more detailed testimony, this becomes a more nuanced opinion. But with taking the NCIS agent's testimony standing alone and taking the expert's testimony standing alone, there's a stark contrast between the two of them, where one is much more definitive than the other. When you're considering you've got members, you've got complex scientific evidence, the first exposure they have to what is this, they've got, which of course during the quality as well, you've got an NCIS agent, a federal law enforcement person, lots of credibility, comes in there and says she has a master's degree, has a lot of experience, and then says, based on my experience, this is not accidental. End of story. And then you go on from there. So I think taken in that context, it is very, very prejudicial to the appellant's case. The crux of the appellant's cross-examination in his case relied on a distinguishing and refining of the expert testimony. If you look at the cross-examination of Dr. Schneider, trial defense counsel brought out the sparing of the wounds, what that means. In other words, there's uniform burn depth to the victim's injuries. There was no part of the bottom that wasn't burned. So what that meant, what was brought up for cross-examination, was that the victim was not held down on the bottom of the sink. Rather, the victim was held suspended in the water, which of course becomes essential to the defense case because the appellant had rotator cuff surgery, and based on the testimony of his physical therapist, would have been extremely difficult and extremely painful for him to hold the weight out suspended in the air due to the injury to his arm. So the expert testimony brought out that the way the child was burned was through being suspended in water rather than being forced down. So all the weight of the child was held in the appellant's, all the weight of the child was held by the appellant. Additionally, through the cross-examination of the expert, through the use of learned treatises and other scientific literature, trial defense counsel is able to bring out the importance of the temperature of the water. How the hotter the temperature it is, the greater the difference between the burns that would be suffered by an adult versus the burns that would be suffered by a child. So at an extremely high temperature, a child would burn much more quickly than an adult would. And of course, also an extremely high temperature, such as 150 degrees, the injuries occurred, which occurred in this case, would have occurred in only about 2 seconds, whereas at 120 degrees, would have taken about 10 minutes. So turning to the rest of the government case, the government never actually tested the water temperature until 4 months after the incident occurred, rendering those temperature results highly suspect. However, even taking the government's case at face value, when the government did actually test the water 4 months later, the government evidence offered that the hottest the water got was 121 degrees. Now, through cross-examination, through the development of Dr. Schneider's testimony, 120 degrees would take 10 minutes of immersion to cause the burn suffered by the victim. Also brought out that the victim had crisp lines of demarcation. There was no wavy pattern to the burn, which means the victim was held still while the burns occurred. So at 120 degrees, the appellant would have had to hold the victim still, held a 9-month-old child out at a 45-degree angle still for approximately 10 minutes to cause the injuries based on the government evidence. And it simply defies common sense, and it defies the scientific evidence that would be the case, that a child could be held perfectly still for 10 minutes to cause these burns.
In view of the expert's testimony, what about the non-expert's testimony was prejudicial? Was it the fact that she was sure of her conclusion, or was it something else, or was it both?
Your Honor, simply the fact that she said non-accidental, and there was no clarification of that. Nor really could there have been clarification of that, because she wasn't an expert. It wouldn't have made any sense for trial defense counsel to utilize the cross-examination he prepared for Dr. Schneider based on scientific literature, learned treatises, and all those things in which I think it would be surmised the special agent did not have, but of course the special agent was never proffered as an expert or given an adequate foundation, so it's not clear what her background was. But I think it's fair to say that because she was not offered as an expert witness at trial, trial defense counsel shouldn't have been expected to conduct an expert cross-examination of a non-expert witness. So therefore, you've got a federal law enforcement agent saying this is non-accidental. And when the members hear that, when they hear a law enforcement agent whose job is to assess crimes and find out who did what, who's the criminal, where's the criminal intent, well, they hear a law enforcement agent saying, I've got experience and this is non-accidental. Now, again, it's the same word used by Dr. Schneider, of course, but coming from a federal law enforcement agent and not being qualified, it has a fundamentally different effect. Right, so that would be where the prejudice was.
So is the rule that you're asking for one where any time a federal law enforcement agent has testified and it's non-constitutional error that we should say that it must be prejudicial?
No, Your Honor. I think balancing the case, this is just balancing the four factors, government case, defense case, and the quality of the materiality evidence, for one, obviously, in this case, is fundamental material evidence. But beyond that, in this case, the government defense case, this is a very weak government case outside of scientific evidence.
How can it be weak when you look at the testimony of Dr. Schneider? I mean, obviously, you've talked about the cross-examination, but Dr. Schneider testified that it was not accidental and that the child was held in the water. And you're correct that there was extensive cross-examination, but then there was redirect examination, and the trier of fact in this case apparently believed that. That to me, or it certainly appears that the testimony of the medical expert on this area would have more weight than a single comment by a non-expert.
Well, you know, when Dr. Schneider says non-accidental, what non-accidental means in her parlance is that the child didn't climb into the water on its own. The child wasn't sitting in the water. Some person was holding the child in the water. And I believe I can't set the page offhand, but the trial counsel or she clarified during her testimony that she wasn't saying it was intentional. She said specifically it was non-accidental, meaning somebody held the child in the water. So it's a very different testimony. And again, certainly the special agent did use the same phrase, non-accidental, but my appellant would submit that it has a fundamentally different characterization when it's not clarified, when it's coming from a federal law enforcement agent. And going back to Judge Ryan's point, in this case, again, the evidence is extraordinarily weak. You've got a government theory which would require the appellant who's got rotator cuff surgery to have held the victim in the water for 10 minutes perfectly still.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then looking at secondary factors as well, you've got your typical profile of a marine child abuser. In this case, the appellant was 28 years old at the time of the incident, had 6 years of experience raising children, had taken care of this victim specifically. He and his wife had taken care of the victim for 6 months, and he had been the sole provider for this victim for 4 months previous to the incident, where the victim's father would drop the victim off at appellant's house.
And despite his rotator cuff injury, he was caring for the infant, right? That information was presented to the members?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your client's statement where he admitted to putting the child in the water but said it was only 15 or 20 seconds and that the water wasn't hot, that was also presented to the members?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the medical medical doctor's testimony made it clear that that could not have been what had happened?
Yes, Your Honor. But certainly, the appellant's statement given to NCIS is not completely forthright because it is not consistent with the scientific evidence. However, appellant, who had provided by the victim's own father outstanding care to this victim for the 6 months he had been taking care of the victim, and for the 4 months he had been the sole caregiver for the victim, for him to accidentally injure the child, the appellant's theory is that the water was extremely hot. He didn't realize how hot it was. He places the victim in the water, causes the burns, and takes the victim out. At that point, he has a 9-month-old child who he's taken care of for 7 months. He's caused significant injuries to it. He becomes scared and isn't completely forthright when he talks to NCIS. And assessing this as a whole, the case that the government presented versus the case the defense presented, and considering the reasonable doubt some of the members had to provide, the erroneously permitted evidence certainly was materially prejudicial to the appellant's case and completely undercut any possibility the members would have had of simply saying this was an accident in the manner I just described, where appellant placed the child in the water, realized it was hot, and took the child out. You got the members having a special agent telling them this was not accidental. So as the members go back into the deliberations room, certainly it's entirely possible, because they're not aware of what the expert basis for the special agent's opinion is. There's no limiting instruction given to the members as well by the military judge. So for all the members could have known, these were equally valid experts, and they were providing two different opinions. Perhaps the special agent had a different scientific basis than Dr. Schneider, and when she said non-accidental, that was entirely valid. So balanced off against Dr. Schneider, members could have certainly surmised, well, we've got testimony this is non-accidental. We've got Dr. Schneider giving some qualifications. There's no qualifications to special agent. Based on that, we're going to find this appellant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, appellant would submit the proper thing to do in this case would be to send this case back to trial. Let the government put their case on with just proper evidence. Let the government put Dr. Schneider on with a qualified expert opinion and not have the members be confused by this other pseudo-expert opinion. Let the members assess the evidence, assess the temperature of the rotator cuff, and the possibility that appellant simply placed the child in water for 1 to 2 seconds, which would be consistent with the evidence, and let them come back with a decision whether or not he's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. This was a material error, an error that was prejudicial to appellant. If there are no further questions, this concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Timothy Delgado, and I, along with Colonel Louis Puglio, represent the government. Because the government has acknowledged that Special Rezus's opinion testimony was erroneously admitted as lay opinion testimony, the only matter left before the court is whether or not that cumulative testimony had a substantial influence on the findings. And the answer is no. Special Agent Rezus's opinion testimony encompassed 4 lines in the record of trial. That's the reason we're here today. That testimony represented just a fraction of her own 30 pages of testimony, and it was insignificant in light of Dr. Schneider's expert testimony on the record and that detail, as appellant has conceded. The opinion the government relied on here was that of Dr. Schneider, the recognized child abuse pediatrician, who testified repeatedly that the burns sustained by the infant were of a non-accidental nature. Special Agent Reese's opinion testimony was nothing more than cumulative and could have had no influence on the findings, let alone a substantial influence. There's nothing remarkable about this case, and it can be resolved through a straightforward application of the four factors utilized by this court in United States versus Toohey. Now, again, because the government acknowledges that the military judge erred in admitting Special Agent Reese's testimony as lay opinion, the only matter left needing analysis is the test for prejudice, and that's whether or not there was a substantial influence on the findings. The lower court actually applied a heightened standard and found that the prejudice was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. That finding may have been out of an abundance of caution, or it may have been as a result of the court's inquiry into legal and factual sufficiency that immediately preceded that finding. But in either case, the government's burden here is simply to show that the disputed testimony had no substantial influence. Turning to the four-part Toohey test, at trial, page 216 of the record, the trial defense counsel made no objection when Dr. Schneider was tendered as an expert, and appellant has conceded here that Dr. Schneider was a recognized expert in child abuse pediatrics. She graduated from Princeton University, graduated from Johns Hopkins University with a medical degree. She did her residency in pediatrics at UC San Francisco. The members heard that she was the director of the Child Protection Center at Capilano Medical Hospital, that she saw referred approximately 600 to 800 cases per year to child welfare. After hearing Dr. Schneider's impressive credentials, the members then heard Dr. Schneider testify actually to the nature of the burns in this case. And as appellants pointed out, we take the NCIS agent's testimony standing alone and then Dr. Schneider's testimony standing alone, let's line them up. The NCIS agent's testimony, again, encompassed four lines, and it was a conclusory opinion. Dr. Schneider's testimony, I'll invite the court's attention to the joint appendix at page 44. What was your medical opinion of how these burns occurred? The accidental trauma? To which Dr. Schneider replies, the pattern of burns indicated that the harm must have been, that he must have been held in place in the hot water for the demarcated lines that we were able to very clearly see on his skin. And then at page 46 of the joint appendix, what would be your ultimate medical opinion as to how these injuries were sustained? Well, the injuries were not consistent with the history being given of an accidental injury in the bathtub. The burns are consistent, and a few lines later, that's all consistent with non-accidental etiology with someone holding him in hot liquid. Members also heard Dr. Schneider interpret the seven photographs in prosecution exhibit number seven that were consistent with someone holding him in hot liquid. Just moving on quickly, the members heard testimony from the baby's father who had stated that the baby was pre-advanced and that when he had previously placed him in hot or cold water, the baby would move around and try and get up. Again, I think probably in addition to Dr. Schneider's testimony, the most compelling evidence the government had in this case was the appellant's own sworn statement to NCIS, which was so implausible and self-serving as to suggest his own guilt.
Did the government have to prove intent to injure?
In this case, meaning, yes, Your Honor.
And does holding a child in hot water demonstrate intent to injure?
That alone may not, but in addition to the direct evidence, the direct evidence in this case was limited, Your Honor, because only appellant and the infant were present. The infant wasn't going to testify, so the government's case obviously relied largely on circumstantial evidence, as well as the expert's interpretation of the burn patterns.
And with respect to the delta, if any, between Dr. Schneider's testimony and the NCIS person's testimony in question, does one address intent and the other not, or are they both of equivalent value on that point?
Well, to the extent that they reached the same conclusion, Your Honor, yes, they were of the same value, but in regards to the relative weighting of those two conclusions, again, the members heard a detailed and thorough testimony from Dr. Schneider, a recognized child abuse pediatrician, and they would have given little, if any, weight, or could have presumed to give little, if any, weight to that opinion of the NCIS agent, who then shortly thereafter testified that this was her first burn immersion case.
I'm asking a slightly different question, which is not whether they pay attention to the NCIS agent.
Yes, Your Honor.
But whether, and I think you've given me your answer, that they are equivalent impact as to the issue of intent, not impact on the members, but in terms of the words themselves.
In terms of the conclusions reached, Your Honor, yes, they were the same conclusions reached.
Sorry for a question. I'm just asking, yes, and I hope the appellant will speak to the particular element of intent as well.
Well, yes, Your Honor, and I think that goes to the fourth Toohey factor. Appellant has mentioned in his brief that the government's conceded that the evidence was both material and sound. It was material, yes, in that it went to a fact connected with this case. In that the information was sound, yes, it was, because it did reach the same reach a sound conclusion in this case. But that conclusion was overwhelmingly supported and amplified by Dr. Schneider. The fourth Toohey factor is not simply the quality of evidence standing alone, but the court is informed also by whether alternatives existed in the record. Dr. Schneider's testimony as to intent on pages 44 and 46 of the joint appendix, as well as on page 206, in which she says, "Can you say within a reasonable medical certainty that the child has not been held still? You would have seen a wavy pattern on his body." And Dr. Schneider again testifies that you would have seen some splash marks if the water was very hot. You would have seen other evidence of movement on the child's skin. Her lay opinion testimony, yes, it was sound. It was just insignificant. Based on the detailed testimony provided by Dr. Schneider, you could have excised the testimony from Special Agent Reasons from the record without the findings in the case or the record being any different. Appellant's own statement to NCIS was simply so implausible, in which he says that he ran his hand under the water to test the temperature before placing the baby in, that he didn't contact the father until 4 hours after, and then only then noticed blistering. He didn't contact the father until 4 hours after that. In addition, Mr. Jamal Cummings, the baby's father, testified that when he first arrived at the house, the first thing appellant said to him was, "It's not as bad as it seems." The strength of the government's case is beyond question. Now, with regard to the second Toohey factor, the relative weakness or implausibility of...
Before we leave the question of the strength of the case and the testimony of the two witnesses, without asking you to agree with this, let's posit that there may be circumstances in which the erroneously admitted testimony of a law enforcement officer who contemporaneously with the event makes an observation, and compare that to an expert who might, months and months later, simply review matters on paper. That might present a situation in which the issue of prejudice has a particular weight. Could you review for us for the date in which the incident took place and the date in which each of these witnesses made their observations?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how they made their observations?
Special Agent Rizis, actually, she was on the scene at Army Medical Center on the evening that the baby was brought in initially. Dr. Victoria Schneider was called in as well on that evening, as was an attending physician who was sent in to consult on the infant. So both Special Agent Rizis as well as Dr. Schneider were present at the initial event here, Mr. Chief Judge. What I want to make clear in this case is that, I mean, as the Second Circuit pointed out in this case cited, Ayala Pizarro, by appellant, distinction or the line between expert and lay testimony is going to be a fine one, and it's going to be one that we're going to have to look to the facts on a case-by-case basis. We're not arguing here, and our position is not that Special Agent Rizis was not qualified to tender an expert opinion, or that a law enforcement agent with the proper training and experience wouldn't be qualified to render an expert position. Our position here is simply that the military judge erred when he admitted Special Agent Rizis' testimony as lay opinion. It's very clear that on the facts of this case, Special Agent Rizis' testimony probably should have been qualified as expert testimony, and the operative words were training and experience.
Counsel, I haven't reviewed the closing argument on the findings in this case to the members. What use did the counsel make, if you know, of the different testimony with respect to lack of accident in his or her closing argument?
Judge Ryan, that's in this case, the trial counsel didn't even refer to the conclusory opinion rendered by Special Agent Rizis. He relied almost exclusively on, one, the testimony of Dr. Schneider, and two, the implausibility of the appellant's statement to NCIS.
With respect to the issue of intent, did he argue from the explanation in the manual that infliction of the type of injury that you can infer intent from the injury itself, or did he make some other argument?
I believe he referenced circumstantial, that the members could rely on circumstantial evidence in this case, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Again, just in closing, Special Agent Rizis' testimony could have been excised from the record, and there would have been no difference in the amount of the quality of evidence supporting the finding of guilty in this case. It seems that appellant has invited the court into basically a second-tier appellate review of legal and factual sufficiency of the findings. That's unnecessary. The members found that appellant's guilt was proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and the lower court found again that the factual and legal findings were supported beyond a reasonable doubt. Again, this matter can be resolved through a straightforward application of the 4.2e factors. Dr. Schneider, the recognized expert in child abuse pediatrics, provided abundant testimony that the baby's injuries were of a non-accidental nature. Appellant's own sworn statement was so implausible and self-serving that it suggests nothing but his own guilt. And finally, Special Agent Rizis' testimony represented just a fraction of her own testimony and was cumulative and insignificant in light of the government's overwhelming case against appellant. If there are no further questions, the government is going to be better.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Referring specifically to the issue of intent, in this case, the appellant was convicted of the offense of maiming. In which case, when you're assessing the intent, there's simple negligence, there's culpable negligence, and there's the intent to cause the serious injury required for maiming. There's simple negligence that the appellant had simply placed the child in the water without taking the due care necessary to make sure the water wasn't too hot. That would be simple negligence. That would not be a criminal act. In order to find this maiming, the scientific evidence needed to show that it was more than that. So assessing that the witness admitted evidence turned on the phrase non-accidental coming from the special agent certainly informed the members upon the intent of the appellant, and it underlies how material this evidence was and how prejudicial it was to the case, because it's such a critical factor in the case where this erroneously admitted evidence should not be discounted by this court, where instead this court should send this back for a new trial because of the prejudicial nature on this material evidence. If there are no further questions, this concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. That concludes this morning's arguments, and the court will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The court stands in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.